Welcome to The Jump. We, too, have many floor leaders here. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside 2016 NBA champ Richard Jefferson and 2008 Finals MVP Hall of Fame nominee Paul Pierce.
Ladies and gentlemen, come on.
Coming up, as Woj reports, KD will enter quarantine for the next week. How should the Nets approach the next four games without him? We'll discuss that. But first, so it is hard to win a professional NBA basketball game when you are down by six with under 25 seconds to go in regulation. Like, really hard. As in, before last night, 8,106 teams had tried it over the last decade, and of those 8,106 times, only twice had a team ever pulled it off. That's not what one would call statistically encouraging. Remember in Empire Strikes Back when C-3PO told Han Solo the probability of them getting through the asteroid field and Han said, "Never tell me the odds"? Yeah, even those odds were better than what the Pacers faced last night in New Orleans. Down six with under 25 on the clock, so it was an absolute mad experience watching what happened next. Victor Oladipo pulling up from nearly 30 feet. That shot as free and easy as a Sunday bucket at the park. The Pelicans appeared a bit stunned as the ball went in, but with just 20 seconds to go at that point and possession, New Orleans still should have been pretty comfortable, right? Leading by three? Except then J.J. Redick, who has been on one end or another of hundreds of thousands of inbound passes over his 15-year career, was part of boofing this one. Both he and Lonzo Ball dissolving under the Pacers' press. And look, even then, you ain't thinking.
Where was Lonzo going? Where was Lonzo going? He started to dribble back into. No, Lonzo,
what's going on right here?
Right? And by the way, you'd think that Stan Van Gundy would have called a timeout at that point, which he could have. They would have advanced the ball to the other side of the court.
They could have advanced it. That's, you know.
Right? Yeah. He didn't, though. Oladipo wrestled it away. Malcolm Brogdon, Miles Turner, bam, the ball game. Then came overtime. Another Oladipo steal here, right? Nice driving layups.
It takes everything to go wrong and everything
Oladipo
to go right.
With another three.
That's why
left 8,000
didn't do it.
This is, of course, the version of Victor that so electrified Indiana when he first arrived there, but has been much harder to come by since he suffered that horrible leg injury over 23 months ago. Honestly, it's just been a weird past year for Victor overall. During his rehab, he tried his hand at reality TV, appearing on The Masked Singer and so well, he earned this whole new wave of fans. Then January and February were tougher. He returned to the court but struggled to find rhythm. Then came the shutdown, right? Then came the bubble, which Victor first said he was opting out of, then decided to opt back in for. But the whole thing was patchy enough. The extension he was once expected to sign this past offseason never materialized. Oh, and somewhere in there, the Indianapolis Star reported that Oladipo wanted out of Indiana entirely, to the point he'd been asking opposing players to trade for him when they were on the court together. Now, Oladipo has denied that story.
Well, players can't fulfill trade requests?
Now that he's set to be a free agent at the end of this
season.
Not
unless you're LeBron.
There's certainly a good chance the Pacers will indeed trade him before the deadline to avoid losing him for nothing a few months later. All of which leads back to last night and Oladipo keying one of the NBA's more statistically improbable comebacks. The Pelicans didn't make it easy, even in overtime. This Lonzo dunk with 25 seconds left tied the score at 116, but Malcolm Brogdon finishing things off, sealing it for Indiana with this floater. The win moved the Pacers' record to 5-2, good for a tie for second in the East. Still plenty of questions, though. Can the Pacers stay in the top half of the bracket in the shortened season? If they do, will Oladipo even be with them at the end of it? I could work out the probability of all that, but as a great man once said, never tell me the odds. A good policy in an asteroid field and apparently also in this weird, crazy NBA season. So, Paul, Oladipo is extension eligible still. He's one of the few contracts in the NBA. There's all these different parameters, but he can still sign throughout the season right up until the end. So they could just extend him and keep him with them, or they could decide he's more valuable to have as trade bait and basically deal him before the deadline, get more back for him, and start with a fresh start with sort of that kind of group. What do you think is a better move for the Pacers right
now? Well, the problem is you have to figure out what the extension number is going to be, because a player like Oladipo, who's been an all-star, is probably asking for max dollars to stay in Indiana. And If I'm a GM or owner for Indiana, I'm not sure if I want to give that to him based on his injury prone history. Mm-hmm. And I want to see if he can get back to that all-star level. So, right, you know, I'm kind of stuck in the middle on what to do. Do I trade him, get younger picks? But if I'm Oladipo, I want to stay there and try to regain form, because this is where they love you. This is where you made a name for yourself. This is where you became an all-star. Mm-hmm. And so the grass is not always greener on the other side. So I think he needs to, you know, weigh his options a little better, but really consider staying in Indiana, maybe at a lower price.
Yeah, and that's tough, though, like, because when you're talking smaller market, when you're talking about Indiana, to say that I want to take a pay cut to stay in Indiana, that becomes a little bit harder. I agree with you. They're invested in him. He was an all-star there. He'll have an opportunity to be an all-star. Like, they want to invest in him. But he also wants to get paid like a person you're investing in. And look, the issue is like, when you have him, then you have Sabonis, and then you have Malcolm Brogdon, and you have Miles Turner. If you pay all your money to those guys, I think we know that the ceiling for those four as a collective unit is probably conference finals if they overachieve or play at their peak. So I can see them trying to negotiate a better deal with Victor Oladipo, because ultimately, if you give him max dollars, that's your team. That's it, and it's a smaller market, so it becomes a little bit more difficult to navigate around it.
One of the questions, too, is how needy is anybody at the trade deadline, right? Because the two names that you will probably hear the most requests for who would be available, well, James Harden is sort of on a different level, but the two names sort of then you've got Bradley Beal, Victor Oladipo, and if teams feel like they're close but not at a point where they could compete for a championship, but they feel it's important for this year, maybe someone's GM job is on the line. Then, you know, maybe the price goes up and someone will give you something great for him. So I think part of that is not really under the Pacers' control.
And to your point, those two players, but I would put Victor Oladipo closer to like a Drew Holiday type, right, where he's a guy that can just kind of get you over the edge. Bradley Beal is a huge difference maker, right, the way he goes. So if you're trading for Bradley Beal, you're going to give up a lot, right? If you're trading for Victor, you might be able to finesse an opportunity where it's like a pick or like one or two young players. You might not have to give up much. So I think Victor's name is the one that a lot of teams are going to be pining for, just like Drew.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I mean, he's not as valuable as Bradley Beal. I mean, we've seen what Bradley Beal has been able to do over the last couple of years, emerging as an all-star, averaging 30 points a game this year. He's that player that can get a team over the hump, say like a Houston Rockets or whoever's at the top. Yeah. I mean, like a Utah Jazz. I'm just throwing teams out there. Victor Oladipo is a question mark still. So, like, how much do you want to sacrifice to bring him in for an opportunity at a championship? It doesn't necessarily guarantee you a championship, but an opportunity. Some teams will take that. Mm-hmm. But it's not guaranteed.
Well, it's in Victor's best interest, obviously, to play as well as he can, up his own value, either for a contract or a trade to a contender, and did that last night. Wow, what a crazy, crazy end of that game. I want to switch over to what happened in the state of Texas. Luka and the Mavericks went into Houston and beat James Harden, John Wall, and the Rockets behind a 33-point triple-double from Doncic. Now, unfortunately for Houston, Boogie Cousins only got to see the floor for 3 minutes.
Kentucky buddies, right?
Yeah. Cousins. Picking
friends
up
between
texts.
The lines, Paul.
Brief entanglement. I mean,
you have friends
Willie
between
Collins
the lines, Paul.
If you went to Kansas and I went to Kansas, a mutual respect, because we went to the same school. We're alumni. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
come on.
Kentucky has so many guys in the NBA. I mean, if they
were. Yeah, and they were all at Kentucky for 8.5 minutes.
Half of the game referee.
So it's like,
John
are you
Noble
really.
Explaining
wait,
his
you went to Kentucky
for the second
too?
Technical, oh, saying Cousins God. Gave, quote, an overt gesture directed at an official in resentment of a non-call. Richard, do you think Boogie's ejection was warranted based on his actions? Is this like Tim Duncan smiling or whatever?
No, because I think everyone will understand that you get a little leeway. When you're Boogie Cousins and you're a multi-time all-star and you're averaging 25 points a game, antics are allowed. We've seen it with other players. We don't need to go and say names like Draymond or need to say, you know, other names where, like, you've seen, like, antics allowed to a certain degree because you've earned that
Richard
right.
Jefferson.
Yeah, sometimes. Yep. But when you have an individual that is now hasn't played in 2 years and is now coming off the bench, the same antics that were allowed 2 years ago when you're an all-star are not allowed right now. I don't think that he would have been thrown out of the game if it was 2 years ago and he was 25 points a game.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it means more when you get 25 a game.
Yes.
So I mean,
okay, but Boogie's been being thrown out of games for a while
now. Yeah,
I think 2 years ago.
He's in the same stratosphere as Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah.
I mean, you think old dogs are going to learn new tricks, but they're not. But you have to give him a longer rope because you already know he's going to be demonstrative. You know he's going to play with a lot of emotion. So he needs a little bit more rope than some of these other guys. Like Draymond, he needs a little more rope. You know he's going to do it. But is it worth throwing a guy out the game if it's really not that necessary? Yeah, you put a hand on somebody, okay. That's one tech. But a look or a stare down or a couple words.
But when you average in 25, Paul.
Yeah, that's easy.
Flip it over to someone who averages a lot of techs, right? You made the comparison to Sheed, right?
Yeah.
So if you are someone who has a history of technical fouls, are the officials a little bit trigger happy?
Let me tell you this. If I'm the coach and you out here getting double technicals in the game and you only giving me like 7 points a game, I'm hot.
You just took away 2 points.
I'm like, now that's 5 points that you ain't got me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I can take it from somebody. Quicker to whistle on someone who has a history?
No, yes, they are, but they're also more, they are allow more with a person. If you are an all-star and you are running off and saying these stuff, they give you, because they don't want to throw the all-star out of the game. They understand.
There's different rules, Richard, for different players in this.
No, I'm not saying that. The NBA is saying that.
Richard wouldn't know about these things. The calls you get and all, you know, the leeway with not getting texts, he wouldn't know about
it. Yeah, look.
Every foul that he got, he earned it.
Everyone. But no, look, Boogie Cousins, this is like what we talked about, players that have had to adjust over the course of their career.
Yes.
Understanding, you know, let's say like a Carmelo, let's say guys that as their careers have, you know, changed and adjusted, it takes that moment. Boogie Cousins, you're not going to get away with the same stuff you did when you were averaging 25 points a game and you're an all-star. You're not. Even if you've always done it, you're not going to get away with it as
much. I couldn't get a call.
No, I couldn't get a call.
Your difference with like Celtics, Wizards versus Clippers.
When I got to the Clippers, I couldn't get a call.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It happens. It's an adjustment.
And that may be the end of that discussion. Welcome back to The Jump. We now bring in our ESPN NBA insider covering the league all over the East Coast, Tim Bontemps. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rachel.
Tim, what up, man?
Hey, P. How you doing, man?
I'm good,
Happy New Year to everybody.
There you go. It's a Boston hello. There we go. I want to take you
down to
Tampa last night when we're talking about the Celtics. 40 points from Jason Tatum. Celtics rallying from an early 13-point deficit to send the Raptors to 1-5 after the game. Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry trying to make sense of their team's slow start.
This is probably uncharted territory for most of us. I know speaking for myself, I've never been a part of something like this. But you know, we can't hang our heads. Nobody's feeling sorry for us.
I think we just need to, you know, get a little bit more grittier, get a little bit more tougher and a little bit more nastier and have a little bit of a swag to us. And right now we have no swag to us. Right now we have nothing, you know, there's nothing to us, right? We're just like that team, like, you know, teams are looking at us like, all right, let's go eat. And that's not a good feeling.
Tim, I mean, we're only 2 weeks into the season. And again, I want to make the point, these guys are playing in Tampa. I mean, they have been displaced more than any other team due to coronavirus. But how concerned are you about the Raptors right now?
I'm really concerned, Rachel. I thought that game last night with the Celtics starting Tremont Waters at point guard, without Marcus Smart, without Kemba Walker, playing on a back-to-back, having played in Detroit the day before, that felt like a game for Toronto to get right, you know, get a nice win at home, or at least their temporary home, before going out on this four-game West Coast trip and around the team. Instead, it was the exact opposite. Vliet and Kyle Lowry said after the game, Nick Nurse, the coach of the Raptors, went basically through every bench player on the team other than Chris Boucher and said that they were not playing good enough. Aaron Baines, the starting center, got Pascal Siakam continues to look lost. So, yeah, I'm very concerned about the Raptors. It is only 2 weeks into the season, but this team does not look anything like the top of the East team that it was supposed to be coming into the season.
Well, look, my thing about this team is that, look, last year when they won 15 games in a row, they were overachieving, right? Like, that wasn't probably them. They were a very good team. I think where they finished in the bubble is probably where they should have, especially given their expectations at the beginning of the year. But then now this year, I think they're just underachieving. They're not a team that should be finished second in the conference, and they're not a team that should be 1-5. So they have a lot of guys that aren't shooting the ball well, like particularly well. Powell is not shooting the ball well. I think with a leadership like Kyle Lowry, they're going to be fine. But the last part is, do not underestimate losing Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka.
Yeah.
Like, do not underestimate. I mean, you look at what Marc Gasol, him and LeBron James have an amazing pairing right now, and then you add that to the way Serge has fit with the Clippers. So you can't look at those two guys and say, these guys are fitting great with championship teams and think that Toronto's not going to have a drop without them.
Yeah, absolutely. Two starters to a championship team.
Well, Paul, let me ask you a question. Toronto keeps being mentioned in the James Harden rumors. Masai Ujiri, remember, took a flyer on Kawhi Leonard, and even though he didn't stay, it paid off for 1 year. Do you think they should kick the tires on that more, Paul? James Harden?
I mean, anything they could do to kick the tires of Toronto, help. I mean, shoot, but it looked like they pushing that flat tire over there. But they are who I expected them to be. When you lose Kawhi,
right,
last couple years, you lost Mark and Serge. It may be time to start thinking about trading Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an aging vet who still can bring some value to a veteran team. Siakam
is one of the ones playing well
Solid. Siakam has been struggling.
Yes.
I mean, but he's their young star. He's who they have invested in and start building around him. Lowry, he's a guy that can help people right now. He can help a contending team. So if I'm Toronto, I'll look at probably start to rebuild after losing all these veterans within the last couple years.
Yeah. I hope that Kyle stays in Toronto just because I like it when a player bonds with the franchise the way he has. I will say that I would expect the Clippers to be pretty aggressive on trying to go after. They need more of a floor general. If guys like that start to become available, I'm curious which teams they will be visiting and whether Toronto is one of them. All right, Paul, I want to switch over to the Celtics because with that win last night, they moved to 5-3. How encouraged are you by their start?
Well, I'm very encouraged for the simple fact you don't have one of your star leaders in Kemba Walker. And you've seen Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown playing like the all-star who we think he can be this year. So this is very encouraging for the Celtics. Although I was disappointed in that loss at Detroit, but they made it. They came back and beat Detroit. But you got to be encouraged, especially for their lack of depth, Smart being out, Kemba being out. And they're right up there at the top with the Eastern Conference.
Well, and what I like about, you know, Jaylen Brown is that he's that, quote unquote, he's been that third guy now for a while, whether it was with Kyrie was there or when you had Gordon Hayward and then you had Kemba Walker. Not that Jaylen Brown wasn't a stud, but he's continued to work on his game. He's continued to add to his game. And the way he is playing now, look, the first 25 games, 30 games dictate whether or not you're going to be an all-star, your team's record and your performance. He is performing like an all-star. Jason Tatum might be the best player, but Jaylen Brown is doing so much at a high level. It's just hard to ignore that.
You know, coming into this season, he said that he wanted to take on the responsibility that came with Gordon Hayward leaving in free agency and with Kemba Walker being out. And he's done that and then some. I mean, he's been, in my opinion, one of the best players in the league over these first couple weeks of the season. He's getting every clutch basket when Boston needs it, when they get into a funk. And with this lack of depth, as Paul pointed out, with these, you know, with Kemba out, without Gordon Hayward, relying on a guy like Peyton Pritchard, who had a huge game last night against Toronto, they need Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to play like this every single night to win. So far, they've been doing that.
All right, I want to switch over to the Nets because Woj reported yesterday that Kevin Durant facing a 7-day quarantine after exposure to someone who tested positive. Now, remember, KD himself had COVID-19 in May, but this is the league's protocol, and if he misses all 7 days, that will include the next 4 games. So starting tonight against Utah, back-to-back against Philly, Memphis, then a Sunday game against the Thunder. So, Tim, the Nets are only 3-4, even with KD playing 6 of the first 7 games. What do you feel the Nets should be focusing on over the next week without their leading scorer?
Well, Steve Nash needs to go find every instructional tape he can find on how to play defense and just play them for the next week, whenever they can. Play them, give them to guys to watch at home, watch at practice, watch on the plane, at the hotel, before the game. This team needs to start guarding people. They don't have very much defensive talent. If you go through their top 8 or 9 guys, I would argue they have no above-average defensive players, and they have several minus ones, whether it's Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert. Torian Prince. So they're already working at a deficit, but this team needs to play much better at that end if they want to be a true championship contender. If you go over the last decade, no team other than the Golden State Warriors has been outside the top 10 in defensive efficiency. And the Warriors in 2018 were 11th in defensive efficiency. That was a team, I think we'd all agree, that had a lot more defensive talent than being outside of the top 10. This team does not have that. They have to get much, much better at that end, I think, if they want any chance of being an elite team in the East.
Yeah, and look, I think Kevin Durant's best defensive years came when he was in Golden State, and that's because of the clear principles, the style of defense. He was motivated. He was up there in conversation towards the end of the year, is like, could he be the defensive player of the year? So is he going to be able to get to that same spot? I don't think so. I think for me, you have to look at the other guys. You always have to look at your team from, like, as a player and say, like, where can I contribute? Losing Spencer Dinwiddie, Torian Prince. These guys have to focus on the defensive end. If you told me all I have to do is become an above average defender and we are a championship level team, but that's what it's going to take. But that's also going to be the leadership. You talk about the leadership of Kyrie, the leadership of Kevin Durant. Can they get the other players to buy in on a defensive scheme? And Steve Nash, and, you know, look, we know Mike D'Antoni is not a defensive, you know, monster, but they need a lot of guys contributing on the defensive end, and they're not getting it.
Yeah, you don't have to have individual great defensive players to have a great defensive team. You just need a great infrastructure on defense. I mean, my Boston Celtics team, we didn't have individual great defenders outside of Kevin, but we had a system in place. But also, I've been watching the Nets this year, and I think they have to do a better job in staggering their stars, too. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin or Kyrie needs to play with the second unit. I also believe Jared Allen should be starting. I mean, I think he's a huge key to what they do defensively. And so I think it's just minor tweaks in what they need to do with their lineup as far as staggering minutes with your stars, getting more time, trying to find more minutes for Jared Allen in that starting lineup also. And I think that'll help their defense performance moving forward.
Tim, what's the politics right now on Jared Allen starting?
Well, DeAndre Jordan is friends with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, so he is starting. There's little doubt to me that Jared Allen is the far better player, and he should be starting, and Paul is right. I'm sure Richard would agree, whether he'll say it or not, and that just doesn't seem like it's going to be the case, and that's to Paul's point. That's
one of the tweaks
that should
happen. It's all about who your friends.
It's all about who you
friends with.
Why are you pointing me? Why are you pointing me? Anyways.
That was fantastic. Tim, thank you so much for joining us.
I will say that as soon as they fired the coach, DeAndre Jordan was starting like the very next
game. Hey, listen, Richard Jefferson was friends with LeBron.
Who?
Therefore, he got on the team.
I don't like that dude.
You know what I'm saying? Therefore, he made the team. He had 1 foot out the league at that point. But
Are you kidding?
I held on. As long as I could, just hold.
Poor Tim has no idea what he's gotten into. Here's what the joke recommends for today, friends. Baxter Holmes revealing how the additional protocols are adding extra strain to the NBA's team health officials. Keeping the players safe has created more difficulty with keeping players healthy. We will discuss this more after the break. This is legendary. Go down as a OG in a new drive. Out there screaming. Legendary. This is legendary. Hey, welcome
now.
Back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols here with Richard Jefferson, Paul Pierce. Let's talk about some of the struggles that league employees are dealing with off the court. Now, before the break, we recommended a story from our friend Baxter Holmes on how team health officials say they're struggling to find balance in managing their jobs amid the current COVID-19 protocols. Compliance with league policy has fallen largely on athletic trainers, who, of course, also responsible for helping players maintain their bodies for optimal performance. One anonymous Western Conference head athletic trainer told Baxter, quote, "We're responsible for the logistics of all the staff, PCR testing, and all of the player rapid testing, and the compliance with the timelines that go into that every day, whether it's an off day, game day. So the workload has increased dramatically, and there's not been a decrease in any of the other workload." Richard, I thought you guys could give good insight, right, between the relationship between players and trainers and this relationship changing with coronavirus protocols and sort of the burden on these guys. And the dynamic is always
a little weird. You're setting it up. All you have to do is say this. it's different than what it was a long time ago, but that's not the point. The point is like that anonymous GM or the anonymous trainer sounded like we have a lot more work to do. That's really what it comes down to, because when we first came into the league, and this is not a get off my get off our lawn, mm-hmm.
it's the whole show. This
you had two two trainers, and one of the trainers was an equipment manager, and that's also why they would crack jokes about if you're a young player, don't even think about getting on the table. Right. You need room for veterans, right?
Right.
But now it's to a point where you have three trainers. You have a sports science team. You have a sleep doctor. You have three nutritionists. You have four weight coaches. You have a staff of like 15 people that used to do a job of three. So don't tell me that these protocols and this more work. Yes, it is more work, but there's a lot of people there that are helping to put their hands on these athletes.
In other words, they're asking for a raise.
Yeah, basically. That's basically saying we got a lot more work to do.
We got a lot more work. I need more pay.
Yeah. I do think it's a lot, and the protocols do keep changing. They just issued something about masks, right? And then when guys are on the bench versus when they come out for halftime versus all of that. It is a lot to keep track of. And then the protocols, too, about how many people can be in a room with a guy when he is on the training table have changed. So I think you are being unnecessarily harsh.
Go 10 years ago.
Yes.
And look, and if we were to do a number, each team that had a quote unquote training medical staff, and we can include the weight team, like the weight staff. Yeah. So you would have a weight coach and an assistant weight coach. No one had personal trainers. So then you would have literally it's a total of six. Now that number has ballooned to between 10 and 15. So between 10 and 15 versus 6, 10, 15 years ago, don't tell me that you can't still get hands on bodies of players. Basically what he's saying is like, can they just the NBA hire one protocol person to handle that so we can focus on the players? That's what I'm hearing.
Said it best.
The teams could hire that if they
could.
Wanted to,
they
right?
could, but they're like, we're paying 15 people already on this staff.
Yeah, but the value of the franchise went up to $2-3 billion.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So there you go. I do know in the bubble there were a couple guys who just forgot to get tested, as you may remember. I'm not pointing any fingers at you, Richard Jefferson, but in teams they would say, well, that the athletic trainer was supposed to chase him down. It's just a lot for these guys to do.
And they've never had to do this before.
And you got to understand, they're putting themselves at more risk of catching also.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have one or two people, I think teams should do this. You have 15 players on a team. You should assign three players to one trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So if that means hiring five trainers now. They have five trainers. And it lessens the load on a lot of these guys, because there's still some teams at the bottom that got one or two trainers.
Well, also, I think part of this is there's more sensitivity because of a short offseason for some teams or a very long offseason for other teams, and you have more soft tissue injury concerns. Another line that stood out in the piece was them talking about how an overload of healthcare providers, meaning that, you know, notable injuries we've already seen this season, right? Do you think that if trainers are stretched thinner, we will see more injuries, or there's no correlation, it's just timing and injuries?
Yeah, there's no correlation. But I will tell you this about the players now. They're more needy also. I mean,
wow.
No, seriously, because I remember my last day.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with COVID protocols.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with the trainer not stretching them or nothing. I mean, you're going to get an injury some way, somehow, because you're an athlete. But the players have come. I remember players coming into and get with the trainer if they had a bad toenail or something. Everybody was on the table. Before, everybody would come in and get up shots, lift weights. Now everybody come in at 8 a.m. to get on the table.
Yeah.
And so there's more demand for the trainer and more work for him.
The technology of the equipment, whether it's game readies, Normatex, all of these things did not exist 10, 15 years ago. So you're talking about no game readies, no Normatex, no like hydrotherapy bath, no all of this equipment there. No, but it's for a player. You can go home in Normatec. You can go home with a game ready. You can get there 15 minutes. Or every team has a massage therapist. Every single team has a massage therapist.
This is bitter.
Sometimes, no, I'm not bitter. I'm just saying that, like, the players have everything at their disposal. So for a trainer to come and say, well, we can't get hands on the players. What are you talking about here?
This is why I want to.
This is why he was anonymous, ladies and gentlemen. This is why he was anonymous. Because he's just like, wait, we only have three massage therapists. We have six trainers. And we have three weight staff. But, you know, we have an overload.
There you go. This is the word from these two guys. I can't see them from their lawn. I'm so far off it, but that's for later. Coming up in this show, after back-to-back wins, a couple of hot shooting nights from Steph Curry, are the Warriors back to being the Warriors again? We will discuss. We got a former Warrior on this set.
Are we ready to compete with those teams? I don't know, but we will compete, you know, and that's the thing. And, you know, I think if we compete, we defend like we've defended the last two nights, move the ball like we've done, I think we can play with anyone.
That was Draymond Green after last night's win over the Kings, which leads us to crunch time here on The Jump. Richard, the Warriors beat the Kings by 31. They have won four of their last five. Are the Warriors starting to give more indications that they are, in fact, a playoff team even without Klay?
Yeah, well, look, this is what the addition of Draymond, like, has done for them.
Yes.
Yeah, another playmaker, a defensive player of the year. But ultimately, they need to make the playoffs because at the end of the day, Klay Thompson does not take them from a non-playoff team to a contender.
Right.
He should take them from a playoff team to a contender.
Yeah, I see the biggest difference is Draymond. His leadership on the court, you know, the numbers aren't really showing it, but just his presence and what he does and what he says on the bench, on the court, has made a huge difference.
Yeah. If you're looking at scoring numbers to evaluate his worth, you're looking in the wrong place. He's been night and day so valuable for that team in the past couple games, much less the past years. All right, Giannis dropping 30 points in the first half last night, finishing with 43 in the Bucks' 10-point win over the Pistons. Paul, does Giannis need to take more of the Bucks' scoring load for them to reach their expectations? Or is it just regular season?
For them to meet their expectations, they need to play Detroit every night. I mean, come on. Look at this defense. There's no wall.
Come on, Plum.
He's just laying the ball up. He's dunking the ball. I mean, have they not seen the blueprint on how to guard him? I mean, come on. I mean, Giannis is a great player. Don't get me wrong. But I'm like, look how easy it looks for him.
Detroit, bottom of the East.
Do anything.
Just Blake Griffin having a tough go again.
Oh, that's not Blake, though. We forgot about him as a body catcher.
Yeah.
Blake.
I'm not even sure Blake played. Did Blake even play this game? Nah.
I'm not saying anything.
Don't look now. New York Knicks are 4-3.
Let's go.
They've won four of their last five games after beating the Hawks last night in Atlanta. Do you think Tibbs is going to have the Knicks being a playoff team this year, Richard?
I think they'll have a chance for the play-in spot. But when you look at the numbers of the Knicks and you're like, okay, how can they sustain this? Well, just go straight to the numbers. Can Alec Burke continue to average 20 a game? Can RJ Barrett average 18? Yes. But can, like, Randall average 23, 13, and 7? I don't know.
Listen,
if he can maintain that.
When I look at
that,
the Knicks, they remind me of an Allstate commercial. You know, it starts off good, and then it just ends up tragic. And I don't want any, I'm not wishing that upon the Knicks, but, you know, it's early in the season. They're 4-3, haven't been 4-3 in over 25 years. I just feel like all the years of watching the Knicks, I'm not so.
You're gun-shy.
I'm not putting money on it.
Well, Tibbs has them playing better defense. He's getting more out of his guys, and also, not shockingly, they lead the league in minutes, number one and number two, right?
Let's go.
Guys, so.
If you want to play, Tibbs is your man.
There you go. Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, 1-2. All right, Knicks-Hawks game last night. Very good. League pass game of the night. But tonight, we got some more great matchups to choose from. Remember, the producer's not allowed to pick anything on national TV. So tonight's choice is Timberwolves-Nuggets, 9 o'clock Eastern. Karl Anthony Towns still out for the T-Wolves with that dislocated wrist. Nuggets have gotten off to a slow start this year, starting 2-4. Paul, do you have any long-term concerns about the Nuggets?
I'm not concerned yet, because like I said, it's early in the season. You don't know who a team's going to be in. You'll know who they are in about 25 games. It's early. I'm disappointed at their slow start based on how they came out the bubble. They look pretty good, but this team is going to get it together. I think they can't help but to.
Yeah, no, I like the Nuggets. I think they definitely need help defensively. They're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. You know, offensively, they're going to have all the skill. Jokic is going to get everyone involved. Jamal Murray is going to get buckets. Porter Jr. is playing well. But Gary Harris, Will Barton, these are the guys that need to step up and be high-level defenders. With their offense, they just need to be somewhere between 10 and 20 on the defensive end. When you start hovering in that 25, like 23, when you start hovering in that range, it doesn't matter what your offense is, you're going to struggle.
I mean, this is a team that was in the Western Conference Finals. Do you can still guys consider them a top 3-4 team in the West, or do you feel like enough teams have leapfrogged them?
I think they are a top 4 team in the West. The record doesn't say right now. Yes, they're a top 4. Joker is playing at an MVP level right now. Jamal Murray has picked it up the last few games. They, like you said, they have to play better defense, but they'll get it together. I think at the end, the best always plays out, and don't get too worried. I mean, the Knicks are 4-3, right? So, I mean, come on. I'm just saying, like, I know they're 2-5. Denver's 2-5, but they'll be all right.
They're one of the teams that could figure it out late, and all of a sudden they're the 7 seed versus the Clippers at the 2 seed.
Well, Timberwolves without Carl Anthony Towns might be a way to get right tonight. We'll see. All right. I want to thank these guys for joining me. But before we go, I do want to congratulate our senior publicist, Shakima Simmons-Winter, who gave birth to a beautiful baby boy, Maverick Matthew Winter, yesterday. Thank you to Shakima for all the work she has done to help us on the jump. We wish you, your son, Maverick, your husband, Matthew, all the best.
Congrats.
See,
that's a beautiful
thing. It's her first kid, by the way. Their whole lives are about to change.
Oh,
there you go. Congratulations. We'll see you guys tomorrow.